This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and it is easy to download. And it is Thursday. We are joined once again by Mr. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area with Aaron on the ones and twos. Gentlemen, how are we doing this Thursday afternoon?
Doing well. Glad to be back. Day four on Town Call this week. Very exciting.
Yeah, this Recombobulation Week has been, I would say, a lot of fun.
Time flies when you're having fun, right, guys? Though time is just an illusion, so I guess that depends on what perspective you look at it from. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution. We got a fun show lined up for you today, though we got to start with a little bit of some sad news, especially for you, Dan. I hate to say it because we mentioned it over the past couple days, but almost like joking in passing. There's a world where this could happen. Well, it came to fruition. The Milwaukee Brewers losing yesterday, I believe 5-2. They have been swept in the NL Wild Card Series. Despite hosting all three games and despite jumping out to early leads in both games, the Brewers' season has come to a close. This is heartbreaking, Dan. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yes, an appropriate sound effect here to talk about the way that Brewers season ends. Yeah, you know, it's 162 game season, and if you reach the postseason, it can be over that quick. So, two very disappointing games, I would say, for the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, it just seems like they're hitting throughout the season. Their offense throughout the season has been so inconsistent. And it just fell flat at the wrong time, and there was enough the Diamondbacks were able to get enough runs around to make it a problem for the Brewers, and a very disappointing one. I think the most disappointing, but the saddest I was in reacting to this was seeing some clips that folks shared of Bob Uecker signing off at the end of the broadcast. You know, obviously he's 89 years old. We don't know how many years he might be doing this, but bummer to hear. It's never a good thing to hear a sad Bob Uecker on the airwaves. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess the conversation that I'm hearing, or at least I'm hearing from a lot of my friends now going into the off season, is the future of Craig Counsell. This is not a great series from a managerial perspective, and it's been a tough couple seasons in the postseason, at least. Keep in mind, the Brewers have 5 postseason appearances, in the last 6 seasons, which is, I'd say, very good for Major League Baseball's smallest market. But we can't seem to get over the hump in the postseason. We haven't won a series since 2018. And since we beat the Dodgers in Game 6 of the 2018 National League Championship Series, of course, unfortunately losing Game 7, but since that victory in Game 6, we're 1-9 in the postseason. Yikes, Dan.
Yeah, I saw something. It was 1-9, and I think it was something around average run scored per game was like less than 2 or something like that. Oof. So it's just goes to show that, you know, I think the Brewers, the strength of the team was the pitching. Over the last few years, Cy Young winner Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Freddy Peralta, some strong arms out of the bullpen. But when you live by pitching, you die by pitching. And if you don't have that strong offense that, you know, you might not have confidence in, when you get down a couple runs, you need to come back. It makes it tough. It makes your margin of, you know, I'm blanking on the idiom there, but it just makes it that much more difficult to win those games if you don't have a strong offense.
Margin of error is very slim when you're not able to get any runs on the board. And I know, Dan, you've been following the 11 a.m. Committee on State Affairs meeting that we discussed yesterday. And I guess my thought again comes to this. You mentioned the dominant pitching. We have one of the lowest payrolls in baseball year after year after year. Now, we have still made the postseason. We've struggled in the postseason quite immensely. But I come back to, you know, you talked about Corbin Burns, for example. The Brewers took him to arbitration last year for over, what, like $740,000, something that's essentially pennies for a Major League Baseball organization, especially someone who is at the top of the field, quite literally winning the NL Cy Young. How do you expect the Brewers to kind of, A, you know, have the audacity to come to the public and say, we need public funds to for this stadium, even though we, the ownership, is not necessarily willing to invest in a successful team? How do you kind of like, you know, make these situations work in your mind? Because obviously we want to keep the Brewers here, but we want a team that wants to win as much as the people of Wisconsin want to support a team that wants to win.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of it's incredible timing that they have the first public hearing asking for $600 million in public funding the day after this, you know, devastating playoff collapse. I'm sure they would have liked for this to be this conversation to be had under different circumstances. I saw a number of the legislators speaking in that public hearing say that they were how bummed they were after watching. I think one representative referred to it as torture the last two nights watching this Brewers team come up short. But yeah, it makes it, you know, just a little bit more of a difficult conversation. Obviously, the big picture of wanting to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee is the main focus of that hearing. And I also wrote something today about that Brewer Stadium funding deal. You can read it over at Milwaukee Record. I partner with them on a few stories. You can read it at Milwaukee Record, and it's in your inbox at the Recombobulation area. Do subscribe. We're right on the edge of 5,000 subscribers. So you could be that 5,000th subscriber today if you jump in and become a free subscriber. But I broke down that Brewers deal in comparison to the deal to fund Fiserv Forum, because I think that is one of the things that has been, you know, kind of missing from this conversation as people are talking about funding for maintenance and upgrades at American Family Field, is the fact that we have this very successful, I would argue, deal to construct Fiserv Forum in the not too distant past. And so I took a look at, you know, the different pieces of that deal and how it compares to the deal for American Family Field. I think, you know, there are some key similarities, and I think there are some even more glaring differences as you get into just the nitty gritty and nuts and bolts of this deal and how it impacts different levels of government.
Mm-hmm. And that's a conversation that we will very likely be continuing to have with you, Dan, as you have always been on the forefront of this news. If you have a sad piece of information you'd like to share with us, a story revolving around the Brewers season, or anything else in that regard, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. If you get a chance, swing over to the Recombobulation area. Check out Dan's story on the Brewers versus Bucks, comparing the AmFam Field and Fiserv Forum Stadium deals. Dan, we're going to move on to another topic of conversation that you and I have been discussing off air, but wanted to make sure that we had the chance to cover on air, and that is the impeachment articles against Megan Wolf. And I'm reading from State Senate President Chris Kapenga's letter to Speaker Voss, where he urged him to move forward with impeachment articles against Megan Wolf. Now, this occurred yesterday, about when we were on air, I want to say. Maybe a little later than that, but we didn't get a chance to cover it, so we wanted to touch on it today. Chris Kapenga, the Senate president, writing to Robin Voss in regards to Megan Wolf, saying the state rejected her appointment on September 14th. Her four-year term expired. The WEC voted 3-0 with three members abstaining to renominate Wolf. As you know, the state Senate has a role of advice and consent over nominations for appointments, including the administrator of the WEC, essentially encouraging Robin Voss to move ahead with this. Now, I found a really interesting piece over from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel noting that impeachment articles against Megan Wolf were riddled with false and misleading claims, including the base of at least five of the impeachment articles on decisions made by a bipartisan panel of six election commissioners who oversee the WEC and Wolf. But remember that as WEC administrator, Wolf is the nonpartisan leader of the state's election agency. She carries out WEC policy. She does not make it. Now, Republicans in their impeachment resolutions blamed Wolf for actions that the commissioners voted to take during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm word salading all over the place here, which was a time when health officials were advising people to avoid crowds. Some actions the commissioners took in 2020 were legally unchallenged, but have since been deemed illegal. Wolf, however, in her position, is bound by law to execute these duties based on commissioners' decisions. She cannot vote on these decisions. And this is something that I think we're going to see hotly debated over the next coming months in Wisconsin as well. Megan Wolf, a conversation that Town Call has featured extensively going back the past few months as well, widely regarded nationally as one of the best in the business, but she is facing the ire of the elected Republicans, who are upset that she did not go along with some of their schemes to overturn the 2020 election, despite the fact that, again, that's not her job. Her job is to carry out the policy that is chosen by the WEC. What are your thoughts, Dan, on this continued aggressive push by the GOP to oust Megan Wolf?
Yeah, I think it's just the latest example of Wisconsin Republicans and their inability to move past their 2020 election denying claims. You know, Kapinga was one of the state legislators who spoke at what essentially amounted to a Stop the Steal rally after the 2020 election. And clearly, you know, it's he and the rest of the Senate Republicans who are trying to fire Wolf have not been able to move on from the ridiculous conspiracy theories surrounding the 2020 election, even though it's, you know, it's been 3 years. Like it's so ridiculous how they can't move on from it. But I guess it just goes to show that's where the Republican Party is these days. You know, the overwhelming front runner in the polls to win the nomination is Donald Trump. Donald Trump still says he won Wisconsin. So So I think it just goes to show how these election denying claims have just totally taken over the Republican Party and has just become the main policy drive, the main thing driving their voting rights and election administration policy in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And the articles that the GOP have put forth as well, you noted on continuing the 2020 election lies. That's been pointed out here as well. Multiple other impeachment articles against Wolf rely on baseless claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election, including one where GOP lawmakers accuse her of illegally directing clerks to correct witness addresses on absentee ballots. The claim is misleading, according to USA Today fact checkers and the WEC determination in 2020, because clerks corrected missing witness information, including addresses, in 11 statewide elections prior to November 2020. A practice that was established in October of 2016. So this was perfectly legal at the time. It has since been challenged, but again, you have to make do with the information at hand at that time. So we're continuing the conversation with Dan Schaefer. This is Town Call. Give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download. Joined on this Thursday afternoon by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area and Aaron Zommers on the ones and twos. We're having a conversation about Megan Wolf, a topic that has been covered pretty extensively on the show over the past few months and will likely continue to be covered. And Dan, I wanted to note, before the break, I mentioned the established practice from October of 2016, when election commissioners from both parties unanimously voted to advise clerks they could fix missing witness information components based on reliable information. Now, this has since been legally challenged by a Waukesha County judge who barred election clerks from filling in witness information on absentee ballot envelopes in a September of 2022 ruling. Now, at the time, this 2016 memo indicates commissioners made their decision based on guidance from the Wisconsin Department of Justice. Brad Schimmel, a Republican, led the Department of Justice at that time. If that name sounds familiar, it's because he was the 44th Attorney General of Wisconsin, having served from 2015 to 2019. He was defeated seeking re-election in 2018 and was subsequently appointed Wisconsin Circuit Court Judge in Waukesha County by Governor Scott Walker. So this appears to be another situation, Dan, where Republicans set a precedent. It gets followed by the individuals who are charged with following these decisions. And then a couple of years down the line, when that decision no longer benefits elected Republicans, they flip. And now they try to punish, in this case, Megan Wolf, for following their own orders.
They're always moving the goalposts, aren't they? The goalposts just get moved whenever something, you know, might happen that goes against exactly what Republicans want. I think, you know, and I think one of the interesting things about this move to, you know, get rid of Megan Wolf, it's largely coming from the state Senate. So that the state assembly has been focused on some other things, and we can talk about some of that. but this push to get rid of Wolf has happened in the state Senate. And I think when you think, one of the important things to remember about the state Senate and its relationship to Wisconsin Elections Commission is that the majority leader in the state Senate, Devin Lemahue, is charged with appointing one of the six members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. The person that he reappointed to the Wisconsin Elections Commission after he was part of the fake elector scheme was Bob Spindell. So I think the election, it's just goes to show how extreme that the Senate Republicans have become on this issue, where not only have they like completely ignored any criticism of their reappointment of Bob Spindell, they're pushing to also get rid of Megan Wolf. Under these, you know, like you mentioned, all these, you know, just going to move the goalposts whenever it's advantageous for Republicans to do so, regardless of any evidence in the past and who and when those decisions were made. And so I think that's, you know, the problem with what's happening in the Wisconsin Elections Commission is not Megan Wolf. It's people like Bob Spindell, and it's the Senate Republicans who have put him in power there.
Mm-hmm. And Dan, we will jump into what the assembly has been working on, because I know you've been following that very closely. But first, I want to remind the audience, we have a very, very special show tomorrow. Former Ohio State Senator and a national co-chair of the Bernie Sanders 2020 presidential campaign, Nina Turner. Nina herself will be on the show tomorrow. We're going to be discussing labor and the growing labor movement in the United States in the wake of a nationwide labor revival. Nina has launched the We Are Somebody multifaceted campaign to champion workers' rights across America. And I am so excited to have Nina Turner on the show tomorrow to cover all of these issues as the labor movement witnesses a resurgence across the country, pushing back against corporate overreach, striving for better material conditions. The Honorable Nina Turner will be on Town Call tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss that. But Dan, you noted it. And we're going to jump on it, what the Wisconsin Assembly has been working on while the state Senate focuses so aggressively on these removal proceedings. And this was happening yesterday. Wisconsin will hear three anti-trans bills in a row. AB 378, a ban on trans athletes in colleges, AB 377, a ban on trans kids in sports, and AB 465, a gender-affirming care ban for trans youth. This occurred yesterday morning prior to and while we were on the show, but we haven't had a chance to share much of what occurred yet, Dan, and I will defer to you.
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is the latest effort of Wisconsin Republicans trying to advance some anti-trans piece of legislation. Of course, you know, they're going with the hot button topic of trans athletes, particularly talking about women's sports, talking about banning medical care for trans youth. And it's such a frustrating dynamic here, because with Governor Evers, there, he's going to veto any of these bills. He has promised he's going to veto any bills that take away rights from trans people in Wisconsin, which these bills would do. So Republicans are advancing this just really to cause harm to trans people. You know, these bills have no chance of being passed and no chance of becoming legislation. And their sole focus really is to demonize trans people in a really damaging way. And even, you know, as you look through, you know, some of the questioning, independent journalist Aaron Reed, who covers a lot of trans issues around the country, did a great Twitter thread and piece about this. I thought one of the most interesting pieces that she tweeted there was one thing saying a question for a witness from the group Moms for Liberty, saying, can you give me a specific example of people harmed by trans youth in the state of Wisconsin playing sports? Moms for Liberty witness Lauren Ackman answers, none. So these bills don't really apply to anybody in reality. And I think there was later in the said that there were six children and six trans kids in Wisconsin who were playing sports. So this is a whole ordeal. There are more witnesses on this bill than there would be people it would apply to. And I think what we should be doing instead is trying to form a more welcoming, inclusive Wisconsin by not demonizing all trans people through these ridiculous bills. And I think that, you know, it was the athletes bill and the medical care bill. You know, we mentioned this yesterday. They changed around the timing for these hearings a bunch of different times. They made it so that one of these bills was in one committee, another of these bills was in another. But the group Fair Wisconsin collected more than 10,000 pages of testimony in opposition to these bills. And I think you saw a lot of Democratic legislators, whether they were in the committee or not, testify and speak out against them. And it's just, what is the point of doing this? They know these bills aren't going to become law, and all it's doing is causing harm to vulnerable populations in Wisconsin. And we should be doing the opposite. We should be taking action to make a more inclusive, welcoming Wisconsin for all people, LGBTQ and on down the list.
Yeah, it's culture war. It's trying to drive people apart using wedge issues that cater to a very small, specific niche of the base. And there was actually another quote from friend of the show, Rep Shelton. One of the witnesses blamed the rise in injury on trans athletes. Representative Shelton asked, if we only have six trans athletes, how are you attributing so many injuries to trans athletes in the state, right?
Right.
And I saw another interesting article a few days ago that noted that a lot of, you know, conservatives at the national level, they're driven by perhaps their religious beliefs, and their religious beliefs are to hate and discriminate those that are different or that they deem to be, you know, bad in the eyes of whatever religion they are coming from. But the majority of the population does not really care about this issue, in the sense that polling data shows most Americans just want to leave other people alone. Let them live their life. Let them do what they want. Let them be who they are. We don't want to get involved. But Republicans then weren't able to drive this issue forward, so they had to find a way to pose the question in a way that got more middle of the road, or maybe politically apathetic people to say, like, oh, wait a minute, yeah, this is a problem. And through aggressive polling data, they found out that sports, in a way, kind of the, I don't want to say the great equalizer, but in a lot of ways, Americans pride ourselves on seeing our country as a meritocracy. And, you know, I will sit here and argue until I'm blue in the face that is not the case. But that's a conversation for a different day. We like to keep the myth going that we're a meritocracy, and sports is one of the few ways where that is still defined. It's pretty easy to tell who is better at, football, baseball, basketball, volleyball, who can hit a golf ball farther, who can hit a baseball farther, who can throw a football faster, that kind of thing can be tangibly measured. And so they decided to find an issue where they could get regular people energized and angry by saying, look, they're trying to ruin sports for your daughters and young women in the country, when the numbers say that is simply not the case.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, it's not like a whole lot of these folks were paying a whole lot of attention to women's sports before. It's just the vehicle that they're using to demonize trans people.
And these are the same people who talk about, well, the WNBA can't sustain itself financially, so let's just get rid of it. Nobody wants to watch it, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Right. And I think that and there, you know, I think the political calculation of this, too, is kind of interesting to think about, because we have a lot of evidence. You know, I think since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, a lot of the more religious conservatives in the Republican Party have been looking for that next wedge issue and have landed on demonizing trans people as their issue. I don't think it's an effective one, though, either. I think you look at there was a really interesting article by a fellow Substacker. And I can send it to you after the show here, talking about the failed electoral history of transphobia. And one of the examples of that, you know, Daniel Kelly's campaign had so many transphobic mailers and messages coming out of it. Well, they lost by like huge, huge margins. And I just don't think. I don't think this is a successful one either for Republicans, as much as it is also, you know, and most importantly, just a hateful, demonizing practice that they're going with here to try and advance these types of laws. So I just think that this is such a misfire in so many ways. And I'll end this part of the conversation, I guess, by quoting State Representative Robin Vining, Democrat from Wauwatosa, about talking about these bills. She said, "You've got a veto coming your way. You know full well that the mere introduction of this bill causes severe mental health concerns for the LGBTQ plus community. The mere introduction of this bill hurts people. So I want to know why. Why? I just don't understand why they continue to do this for any other reason than just culture war and demonizing trans people. And it's frankly, it's disgusting."
Or perhaps hurting people is what they want to do, because the cruelty is demands.
The cruelty is the point.
Exactly. That was what I was kind of trying to get at, Dan. You phrased that better than me, but this is not electorally popular, but a lot of religious conservatives feel inclined to push their worldview on everybody else. They expect the rest of society to kind of bend the knee to whatever their beliefs are. So they had to find a way to make this issue more palatable. And I guess evidently this is the avenue they have chosen. So we are joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area today. Unfortunately, it's our last day of Recombobulation Week, Dan, but we have had so much fun and we're going to keep it going into future weeks as we have you back for our weekly segment. We got one more segment on the show today. We're going to do our guest host giving his fantasy flyer and labor lock of the week. We're going to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, the labor movement. There was big developments last night in that as well. And we're going to hit the phone lines. If you have a comment, question, or concern, give us a call. Shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We're finishing up Recombobulation Week with Mr. Dan Schaefer. We got one more segment in the show today, and I'm going to jump to the phone lines quick. We got Mark from Prairie du Sac on the line. Mark, what are your thoughts on anything we covered on today's show, including the Brewers, including the anti-trans legislation, including Megan Wolf? What would you like to contribute?
On two of the issues. I mean, these Republicans don't recognize the fact that there actually are people that are trans, and there's actually, you know, the cases of intersex people who present openly the genitals of one sex, and actually the genetic makeup is the genetic makeup of the other sex. I mean, it's not common, but it's not unheard of. And that, how are you to they're trying to pass legislation on something and even broadly, that there's just a small percentage of the population that this actually impacts, and the doctors and parents and should be able to make these decisions, as well as careful screening, you know, that is going on prior to any kind of, you know, reassignment surgery that goes on, but they shouldn't be banning it. As for Megan Wolf, I mean, it's ridiculous to say she was applying the law in the advice that she was given. What was given law was given to her, and she was applying that law until a judge changed it. You cannot retroactively punish somebody because the law has changed. I mean, it's just there's no cure for these guys for being AHs. I mean, it seems like the entire Republican Party here in the state of Wisconsin are just AHs, and that they're pursuing this kind of thing. There's none of them that are out there, you know, standing up and saying, this is ridiculous that we're doing this stuff. You know, bowing down at the altar of Donald Trump, who is likely to be convicted of, has already been convicted of fraud, tax fraud, or evaluation fraud in New York City. It's just a matter of what the punishment is going to be. I mean, it is just, and they want to overturn the election. I mean, they should be confronted. If I run into these guys when I'm out, I'm going to just say something to them. Just come out and say something to them. And if they hip or something like that, I'm going to say, you know, this guy just threatened me with a firearm, and I want him arrested. I mean,
you hit the nail on the head, Mark, when you said retroactive punishment is unacceptable, right? Megan Wolf was following her authority and following the rules as they were currently written. You cannot, after the fact, come back and punish her for doing her job. That is absolutely absurd. In what world is that acceptable, other than Republican politicians as they move the goalpost further and further and further? That's a great point, Mark, and nail on the head. Thank you. So going on to another point of conversation, Dan, that I really wanted to touch on, that we will probably be touching on quite extensively tomorrow when Nina Turner joins the show. You're not going to want to miss that. But on the labor front, Kaiser Permanente and unions for 75,000 striking health workers hit a bargaining snag. Over from Reuters, as the Kaiser Permanente unfair labor practices lead to the largest healthcare worker strike in U.S. history, spanning hundreds of hospitals and facilities across the nation. More than 75,000 Kaiser Permanente workers in multiple states will go on strike on Wednesday, yesterday, to protest unfair labor practices and unsafe staffing levels at hundreds of hospitals and facilities across the United States. The strike, which is expected to last for 3 days, will be the largest healthcare worker strike in U.S. history. Healthcare workers are taking the work action to protest Kaiser executives' bad faith bargaining, which is getting in the way of finding solutions to solve the short staffing crisis by investing in its workforce. We love to see it, Dan. I make this joke every time we are talking labor, but it rings more and more true every time I make it. Hot labor summer is like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. It is here to stay.
It's an exciting development, and I think, you know, healthcare workers have done so much over the past few years in America, and I think it's the right time for them to be stepping up and speaking out for their rights. So I think solidarity, absolutely.
And I wish we had a whole nother hour where we could talk about this, but it just means you'll have to stick around to listen to the conversation tomorrow, as we are joined by former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner. The Honorable Nina Turner herself will be in studio with me for tomorrow's episode. And if you got nothing going on this week, check out the Our Wisconsin Revolution 2023 convention, where Nina Turner, as well as John Nichols and Harvey Kay, will be featured special guests October 7th, this Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Richard T. Anderson Center in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. That's going to be a ton of fun. Come on down, see me there. We can have a conversation about all things Wisconsin and national politics. But before we end the show, Dan, we got to give our Thursday fun segment the Fantasy Flyers and Labor Locks of the Week, a Professor John Shelton special. And I have to give Professor Shelton credit, because he struggled the first couple weeks. I was the king of this metaphorical court. But his pick last week of Tony Pollard, the labor lock, ended up as the running back 28 with 9.75 points. That beat my labor lock of Keenan Allen. Well, he had 12 points. He was the wide receiver 30. My flyer of George Kittle did not go so hot. 1.9 fantasy points for the tight end 45. But John's fantasy flyer quarterback, Anthony Richardson, dropped a 33 spot for the quarterback 8 on the week. Dan, I like to defer to our special guests because it gives you the opportunity to have your pick of the litter. Who is your labor lock of the week?
All right. Well, when I try to pick out somebody, you know, I like to look at their opponents, you know, for a lot of these games.
Play the matchup.
Mm-hmm. Play the matchups. Mm-hmm. And what I've been doing a lot this year is seeing who is playing the Chicago Bears. That's the start.
Oh,
how I
no, don't do it to me. You're going to take my guy. All right. All right. Do it.
So I'm going with Washington Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin as my lock of the week. Going against the Chicago Bears.
Oh, okay. Wow. You didn't actually. It was close. I was afraid for a second. I couldn't decide between the BR squad, Brian Robinson, running back from the Commanders, or Bijan Robinson, running back from the Falcons. I was going to go with Brian, but I'll mix it up then because you got that Commanders pick. I'll take Bijan Robinson going up against a Houston defense that has struggled immensely against the run, though that Bears defense has as well. So, you know, it's a either or in this situation.
Pick the Commanders' defense, pick any of their running backs, tight ends, you know, just pick anybody who's going against the Bears.
That sounds like my DFS lineup this week. And who is your fantasy flyer of the week, Dan?
I'm going with Jonathan Taylor. Flyer to see if he's going to come back. If he's going to be in the starting lineup for the Indianapolis Colts after missing the first 4 weeks with injury.
That is a big, bold prediction, Dan. I love it. My flyer was going to be coming off of a goose egg last week. I was going to go with Jordan Addison. Minnesota's got a nice matchup against the Chiefs. Should be a shootout. Thank you so much for joining us this week, Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, filling in as this week's guest host. It was tons of fun to have you. We always love to have you on the show. Check him out at recombobulationarea.news or follow him on Twitter, Dan R. Schaefer. Thanks for joining us this week, everybody. We're going to be back tomorrow with former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner. It's going to be a fun show. You're not going to want to miss it. Take it easy, party people.
Thanks, everybody.
So we'll see you tomorrow.